A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants to talk about how to view a rental or a home you're thinking of buying like an actual professional. Not the weekend open house wander through. Not the 5-minute skim where you check if the couch fits. He's asking what a trained eye catches that everyone else misses, what the real red flags are, and how to walk through a property without getting emotionally sucker punched by fresh paint and good lighting.
Oh, this is my territory. Retired pediatrician, sure, but I've moved enough times and helped enough friends avoid disasters that I've built a mental checklist that would make a building inspector nod in approval. Most people walk into a viewing, and they're already mentally arranging furniture before they've checked whether the ceiling is actively separating from the wall.
I once almost signed a lease because the window had excellent napping light. Turned out the excellent napping light was because the window frame had rotted out and was letting in about 40% more sun than intended.
The emotional override is the single biggest problem. Agents and landlords stage properties to trigger that I could live here feeling within the first 8 seconds. The science is settled. Buyers and renters who decide primarily on emotional first impressions overpay by a measurable margin and miss structural problems that cost thousands later.
Walk me through it. I'm standing at the front door of a place I'm serious about. What's the first thing I do that separates me from the amateurs?
You don't walk in yet. You stand outside for a solid 2 minutes and look at the roof. Not a glance. Actually look. Missing shingles, sagging ridges, patches that look newer than the rest? Roof replacement is one of the most expensive repairs in home ownership, and in a rental, a bad roof means leaks the landlord will patch instead of fixing properly. While you're out there, look at the grading around the foundation. Soil should slope away from the house. If it slopes inward, every rainstorm directs water straight at the foundation.
If I'm looking at an apartment where I can't exactly inspect the roof,
then you're looking at the ceiling of the top floor unit, or asking directly when the roof was last replaced. For an apartment, your exterior check is different. You're looking at the condition of common areas before you even reach the unit. Hallway carpets, stairwell lighting, the mail area. A building where management neglects common spaces is a building where your maintenance requests will vanish into a void.
The lobby is the landlord's resume.
Here's a specific one. Check the exterior caulking around windows and doors. If it's cracked, dried out, or missing, you're looking at water intrusion and drafts. In a rental, that means higher utility bills and potential mold. In a purchase, that's a negotiation point for the inspection contingency.
All right, we step inside. What's the first thing you do?
I turn off every light and close every blind. I want to see the place in its worst possible light, literally. They'll have every lamp on, blinds fully open, maybe those ridiculous 5,000 Kelvin daylight bulbs that make a basement feel like a surgical theater. Kill all of it. Is the living room actually dim and cave-like at 2 in the afternoon? That's what you'll live with half the year.
This is the anti-staging move.
While the lights are off, pull out your phone flashlight and shine it at an angle along the walls and ceiling. You're looking for patches, bumps, discoloration, anything that suggests a patch job over water damage. Straight-on viewing hides a lot. Angled light reveals texture differences that mean someone spackled over a problem and painted it.
Right. What about floors? I feel like floors tell stories.
They absolutely do. Walk every inch, not just the main pathways. Step into corners, near baseboards, in front of windows. You're feeling for soft spots, squeaks beyond normal settling, any give that suggests subfloor damage. In a bathroom or kitchen, get down and press around the toilet, tub, sink base, and dishwasher. If the floor feels spongy or the linoleum is bubbling, water has been sitting there.
Spongy is a word you never want associated with your floor.
And here's one most people never think about: bring a marble. Set it on the floor in the middle of a room and see if it rolls. Floors that aren't level can indicate foundation settling, which ranges from cosmetically annoying to structurally terrifying. In an apartment, a slight slope might be character. In a house you're buying, you want to know which it is before you commit.
The marble trick is delightfully low-tech. I'm picturing you at an open house with a velvet pouch of marbles, like some kind of inspection wizard.
I have absolutely done this. I've also brought an outlet tester, about $8 at any hardware store. Plug it into every outlet. It'll tell you if the outlet is wired correctly, grounded, if the polarity is reversed. In an older building, ungrounded outlets are a fire hazard and an electronics killer. In a rental, it tells you whether the landlord updated the electrical or just slapped new faceplates on knob and tube wiring from the 1920s.
If the outlet tester comes back with problems on half the rooms,
then you're looking at an electrical overhaul that could run $8,000 to $15,000 in a house, and in a rental, it means the landlord is cutting corners on safety. Either way, you walk or negotiate hard.
Let's talk about the things people are embarrassed to do during a viewing, but absolutely should. Sniffing, touching, the slightly weird behaviors.
First, yes, you should smell everything. Get your nose right up to the basement wall, the undersink cabinet, the closet corners. Mustiness means moisture means mold, even if you can't see it. A strong air freshener or recently baked cookies during a showing is a classic masking tactic. If a place smells like a vanilla factory exploded, be suspicious.
The cookie trick is so old, it's practically folklore.
It still works, which is why I'm telling people to ignore the cookies and sniff the baseboards. Second embarrassing but essential move, run the shower in taps, not a quick on-off. Let the water run for a solid 2 minutes. You're checking water pressure, how long it takes to get hot, and listening for pipes banging or whistling. Low water pressure can indicate corroded galvanized pipes slowly closing up from the inside.
In an apartment building, you're also checking whether the hot water is adequate or if you'll be taking lukewarm showers every time someone else does laundry.
While the water's running, flush every toilet. Watch how it drains, listen for gurgling in other fixtures. A toilet that struggles or a shower that backs up when you flush means a partial blockage in the waistline, and that is not a quick fix.
What about windows? You mentioned caulking outside, but what do you do from inside?
Open and close every single window. If a window is painted shut, that's a fire escape hazard and a ventilation problem. If it's stuck, warped, or the counterweight is broken, that's a repair the current owner or landlord didn't care enough to make. In a purchase, window replacement is expensive, roughly $500 to $1,500 per window. A house with 15 original single-pane windows from 1970 is looking at a serious bill.
In a rental, a window that doesn't open is just a wall with extra steps.
A wall that also lets in drafts and runs up your heating bill. While you're at the windows, look at the corners of the frame for black or gray discoloration. That's mold. Window condensation creates perfect mold conditions, and once it's in the frame, it's nearly impossible to fully remove without replacement.
All right, let me push you into a slightly weirder direction. What are the things you do that aren't about the building itself? The neighborhood reconnaissance? The neighbor interviews?
This is where I get extreme, and I'm not going to apologize. If you're buying a home, and honestly, even if you're signing a 12-month lease, visit the property at different times of day and different days of the week before committing. Tuesday at 11 a.m. is not Friday at 11 p.m. That quiet street might be a cut-through for bar traffic. That serene backyard might be directly under the evening flight path that didn't exist during your Saturday morning showing.
I've heard of people sitting in their car outside a potential apartment at night just to see what the street feels like. It sounds paranoid, but it also sounds smart.
It's not paranoid, it's due diligence. While you're there, talk to the neighbors, not the ones the agent introduces you to. Knock on a door two houses down or in the adjacent apartment and say you're considering moving in. Ask about noise, the landlord, if it's a rental, how long maintenance takes. People love to talk about their building, especially if something's wrong.
The neighbor interview is underrated. They have no incentive to lie to you, unlike everyone else involved in the transaction.
The seller's agent works for the seller. The landlord works for themselves. Even your own agent gets paid when you close. Their incentive is for you to buy something, not necessarily the right thing. The neighbor across the hall just wants to know if you're going to be loud. They'll tell you the truth about the elevator that's been broken for 6 months.
What about things inside the unit people don't think to ask about? Internet connectivity, cell reception, things that are basically utilities now.
This is huge and completely missed in most traditional inspection advice. Pull out your phone and walk every room. Check your signal strength. In older concrete or masonry buildings, certain rooms are essentially dead zones. If you work from home, that's a deal breaker. Ask what internet providers are available at the address, not what do you have, what's available. Some buildings have exclusivity agreements with one terrible provider, and you won't know until you're stuck.
I've lived in an apartment where the bedroom was a cellular black hole. I had to take calls in the kitchen standing on 1 foot near the window. It gets old fast.
Completely avoidable with a 30-second check. While we're on utilities, find the electrical panel. Is it a mess of unlabeled breakers? Signs of scorching or rust? Is it a Federal Pacific or Zensco panel? Those brands have known fire hazards and should have been replaced decades ago. If the panel is original to a 1970s house, you're looking at a full replacement, $2,000 to $4,000, more if the service needs upgrading from 100 to 200 amps.
We've got our marbles, our outlet tester, our willingness to sniff baseboards and interrogate neighbors. What about the stuff behind the walls, the things you literally can't see?
This is where you ask questions that put the seller or landlord on the spot. Ask the age of the water heater, furnace, and air conditioning unit. Not, are they working? How old are they? A water heater lasts 8 to 12 years. If it's 12 years old and still working fine, it's on borrowed time. Ask about the last time the sewer line was scoped or the chimney cleaned. Ask if there's ever been a radon test and what the levels were. Radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer after smoking. Odorless, colorless, comes up through foundation cracks. Testing is cheap. Mitigation runs $800 to $1,500. Worth asking up front.
Let me pivot slightly. There's a whole category of problems about the legal and financial setup, especially for rentals. What should people be asking about that isn't the building itself?
Read the lease before you view the apartment. If you can get a copy of the standard lease, read every clause before you're standing there falling in love with the exposed brick. Look for clauses about subletting, guest policies, maintenance responsibilities pushed onto the tenant. Some leases make you responsible for appliance repairs, which is absurd. Some have early termination penalties that are effectively illegal but hard to fight once you've signed.
For purchases, it's the HOA documents, right?
If you're buying a condo or a house in a managed community, get the HOA documents and read them like a lawyer. Look at the reserve fund. A healthy HOA has enough in reserves to cover major repairs without special assessments. If reserves are low, you're one roof replacement away from a five-figure bill split among all the owners. Look at the meeting minutes. They'll tell you about ongoing disputes, problem residents, and maintenance issues invisible during a showing.
Meeting minutes as a window into building drama. I love it.
It's the best document nobody reads. You'll find out about the guy on the third floor who keeps flooding his bathroom, or the lawsuit against the original developer for shoddy construction. That's gold.
What about things that aren't deal breakers, but are negotiation points?
Everything we've talked about is a negotiation point if you approach it right. The key is to document it and present it as a factual finding, not an emotional complaint. Don't say the bathroom feels dated. Say the bathroom has original 1980s fixtures, deteriorated caulking, and evidence of water staining around the tub surround. I estimate these repairs at roughly $2,000. That's a concrete ask, harder to dismiss than a vague complaint.
You're essentially building a repair estimate during the viewing.
Bring a notepad or use your phone. Write down everything, take photos, and after the viewing, roughly price out the fixes. Even if you're renting, you can say, the window seals are gone, which will increase my heating costs. Can we adjust the rent to reflect that? Landlords who refuse all such requests are telling you something about how they'll handle future maintenance.
What's the single most expensive thing people miss during a viewing?
Uneven floors we covered, but also look for diagonal cracks in walls, especially around door frames and windows. Horizontal cracks in basement walls are a major red flag. That's hydrostatic pressure pushing the foundation inward. Stair-step cracks in brick exteriors are another sign of settling. Foundation repair can run from $5,000 to over $30,000. It's the kind of problem that turns a dream home into a financial nightmare.
Foundation issues aren't always obvious because people assume old houses just have character.
Character is what the listing calls it. Structural deficiency is what your bank account calls it. Learn to tell the difference.
What about pests?
Look for droppings in cabinet corners, under sinks, in the back of closets. Look for termite tubes, little mud tunnels along foundation walls or floor joists. In an apartment, ask about the building's pest control schedule. If they don't have one, or if it's as needed, that means they wait until there's an infestation and then do the minimum. A building with regular preventative pest control has professional management.
I assume you also want to check for bedbugs, though that's harder during a daytime viewing.
Harder, but not impossible. Pull back the corner of the carpet near the baseboard if you can. Look for tiny black spots, bedbug feces. Check the seams of any built-in furniture or closet shelving. In a furnished rental, check the mattress seams. Bedbug remediation is expensive and psychologically draining. It's worth being a little awkward about it.
All right, we've covered a ton of ground. But how do you actually execute all of this during a 30-minute showing without looking like you're conducting a criminal investigation?
You're not going to do everything in a single viewing, and trying to would make you look unhinged. First viewing, big structural stuff, water damage, overall condition, neighborhood vibe. That's your filter. Most places won't pass this stage. If a place passes, schedule a second viewing and tell the agent or landlord explicitly that you want to do a more thorough inspection. Bring your outlet tester, your marble, your notepad. A serious buyer or tenant doing due diligence is not weird. It's a green flag.
If the agent or landlord pushes back on a second viewing or seems annoyed by your thoroughness,
that's information. Someone who doesn't want you to look closely has something they don't want you to find.
By the way, fun fact, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today.
DeepSeek's been making some interesting moves. Their API pricing has been pretty aggressive compared to the big players. Anyway, what about new construction? Does the inspection approach change when you're looking at a brand new building? New construction has its own problems, and people let their guard down because everything looks pristine. New doesn't mean well built. Some of the shoddiest construction I've ever seen has been in buildings less than 5 years old. Builders rush to close, cut corners on materials, and count on problems not showing up until after the warranty expires.
What specifically goes wrong?
Settling is a big one. A new building does most of its settling in the first few years. Cracks in drywall, doors that stop latching, gaps in trim work. Not necessarily structural, but annoying. The bigger concern is systems installed incorrectly. HVAC ductwork not sealed, plumbing not pressure tested, electrical panels with loose connections. For new construction, ask about the builder's warranty and what it actually covers. Typically 1 year for workmanship, 2 years for mechanicals, 10 years for structural. But the 10-year structural warranty often has so many exclusions it's nearly impossible to claim against. Read the fine print.
What about the finish work? New construction often looks great in photos but feels cheap in person.
The finish work tells you about the builder's standards. Open and close every cabinet door. Do they align? Run your hand along countertop seams. Look at paint lines where the wall meets the ceiling. A clean, straight line takes time and skill. A sloppy line means the painter was rushed, and if they rushed the visible stuff, what did they do with the stuff you can't see? Another one, look at the tile work. Are grout lines consistent? Are there sliver cuts at the edges? A good tile installer plans the layout so you don't end up with a half-inch strip at the edge of the shower. If you see that, they didn't plan. They just started tiling and hope for the best.
Let's talk about something rental-specific. The walkthrough at move-in versus move-out. How do you protect yourself from getting charged for damage you didn't cause?
This is absolutely critical, and most renters do a terrible job. Before you move a single box in, do a documented walkthrough. Take photos of everything, every scuff, every nail hole, every stain, every chip. Email these photos to the landlord the same day, creating a time-stamped record. Note everything on the move, in condition form, and don't let them rush you. Attach additional pages if needed. Be annoyingly thorough. Small scratch on living room windowsill, approximately 2 inches long, near the left corner. When you move out, they'll try to deduct for pre-existing damage if you can't prove it was there when you moved in.
The burden of proof is essentially on the tenant.
In most jurisdictions, yes. Documentation is your leverage. I'd also recommend taking a video walkthrough on your phone, narrating as you go. It takes 10 minutes and can save you hundreds or thousands of dollars.
What about the things that aren't damaged but are just...
Deep clean before you move in, even if it looks clean, especially the kitchen and bathroom. Pull the refrigerator out and clean behind it. Clean the oven, the dishwasher filter, the bathroom exhaust fan. Previous tenants were not as clean as you hope. I've helped friends move into apartments that looked spotless during the viewing, and we found things behind appliances that I won't describe on air.
I appreciate that restraint. Let's loop back to home buying. What documents should people request that aren't part of the standard disclosure packet?
any major work, additions, electrical upgrades, plumbing reroutes, roof replacements, should have a permit on file with the local building department. If the seller says the basement was finished in 2018 but there's no permit, it may not meet code, your insurance might not cover it, and you might have to tear it out. Another document, the seller's property disclosure statement. Sellers are required to disclose known defects, past flooding, foundation issues, pest infestations, boundary disputes. If they check no on everything and you found evidence of water damage, they're either lying or unaware, and neither is good.
What about surveys?
Get a survey. Don't rely on the old one from when the seller bought the place. Fences, sheds, driveways can encroach on neighboring properties, and you won't know until you have a current survey. A boundary dispute with a neighbor is one of the most expensive and emotionally draining legal fights you can have. Also, check the flood zone designation. FEMA maps are publicly available online. If the property is in a flood zone, flood insurance can add thousands per year. Even if it's not, ask about flooding history. Has this property ever flooded? Is a direct question. The seller is legally required to answer truthfully in most states.
I want to ask about something controversial. What's your take on waiving the inspection contingency in a competitive market?
I think waiving the inspection contingency is one of the most dangerous things a buyer can do, and I would almost never recommend it. Without it, you're buying as is, and any problems you discover after closing are yours. In a hot market, I understand the pressure. But if you're going to waive it, bring an inspector to the viewing before you make the offer. A pre-offer walk and talk. It's less formal, maybe an hour instead of three, no written report, but you get a professional's eyes on the major systems before you commit. It costs a few $100s and can save you from a catastrophic mistake.
That seems like a reasonable middle ground.
A good inspector will catch things in 5 minutes that you and I would miss after an hour. They know where to look, they know what patterns indicate what problems, and they have no emotional attachment to the property.
What about things that aren't problems yet, but will be? The deferred maintenance that's visible if you know what to look for.
The roof is the classic. If shingles are curling or losing granules, you've got maybe 2 to 5 years before replacement. The HVAC, if the outdoor unit is rusty or the fins are bent, it's aging. Ask for utility bills from the past 12 months. High bills relative to square footage suggest poor insulation, leaky ducts, or an inefficient system. The numbers don't lie. A beautifully renovated house with terrible insulation will have heating bills that tell the real story.
All right. Let me ask for the extreme recommendations. What pushes the limits of what's reasonable during a viewing?
Bring a moisture meter. They're about $30, and they let you check walls, floors, and ceilings for hidden moisture. If the meter spikes near a window, a plumbing wall, or a basement corner, there's water where there shouldn't be. It's the kind of tool that makes agents nervous, which is exactly why you should have one. Here's another, a thermal imaging camera attachment for your phone, about $200. It'll show cold spots indicating missing insulation, hot spots indicating electrical problems, temperature differentials around windows and doors. In a house you're buying, $200 to potentially uncover thousands in hidden issues is a spectacular return on investment.
You're essentially doing a mini home inspection during the viewing.
You're about to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars or commit to years of rent. The social awkwardness of being thorough is a tiny price to pay. I'd also recommend testing the water with a TDS meter, total dissolved solids. High TDS can indicate hard water that'll destroy your appliances and your skin over time. It's also a clue about plumbing condition.
What about the more extreme social stuff?
Knock on doors above, below, and adjacent to the unit. Ask specific questions. How thin are the floors? Can you hear your upstairs neighbor walking? Has there ever been a leak from this unit into yours? People will tell you things they'd never put in writing. Ongoing disputes with the landlord, pest problems that come and go, the heating system that fails every January, none of that shows up in the listing. While you're at it, check local crime maps, the sex offender registry, your city's code violation database. Most municipalities have these online. You can see if the property has a history of code complaints. That's the building's rap sheet.
I hadn't thought about code violation databases. That's a great tip.
It's public information almost nobody checks. One more, if you're seriously considering a place, visit it during or right after a heavy rainstorm. You want to see how the property handles water. Is the yard a swamp? Is the basement dry? Are gutters overflowing? Water management is one of the most overlooked aspects of a property, and you can only really evaluate it when it's actually raining.
The rainstorm visit requires some dedication.
It does, but if you're buying, it's worth the effort. Water is the enemy of buildings. It rots wood, rusts metal, grows mold, attracts pests, undermines foundations. Seeing how a property handles a real downpour tells you more than a dozen sunny day viewings.
What's the weirdest thing you've personally discovered during a viewing?
I once found an entire addition built without a foundation. It was sitting on concrete blocks on top of the dirt. The floor had a slight bounce, and when I went into the crawl space, there was nothing underneath. The seller's disclosure said, addition built in 2005. No permit, no foundation, no chance. I was buying that house.
A foundationless addition. That's impressively bad.
It's still standing as far as I know. Someone bought it. I hope they negotiated hard.
All right, let's start wrapping up. If someone is going to a viewing this weekend, what's the 5-minute version? The absolute non-negotiables.
Number 1. Don't fall in love during the first viewing. Number 2. Check for water. Stains, smells, spongy floors, exterior drainage. Number 3. Test everything that moves or turns on. Windows, doors, faucets, toilets, outlets. Number 4. Look at the big ticket items. Roof, foundation, HVAC, electrical panel. Number 5. Talk to a neighbor. If you do nothing else, those 5 things will catch most of the disasters.
Document everything, whether you're renting or buying.
Photos, notes, videos. Your memory is not as good as you think, especially when you're looking at multiple properties. Create a folder for each place. You'll thank yourself later.
When do you bring in professionals? At what point does the DIY inspection end and the paid expertise begin?
For a rental, probably never. You're not hiring an inspector for an apartment you don't own. But you can apply these principles and make a better decision. For a purchase, the professional inspection happens after your offer is accepted, during the contingency period. But by that point, you should already have done your own thorough assessment. The professional inspector might find additional things, but you shouldn't be relying on them to catch obvious problems you could have seen yourself. The amateur inspection is a filter, not a replacement. It's how you decide which houses are worth making an offer on. The professional inspection is your safety net, not your primary screening tool.
What's the one thing you wish more people understood about this whole process?
That the market is not your friend. Everyone involved has financial incentives that may not align with yours. The seller wants the highest price. The agents want the deal to close. The lender wants to originate the loan. The landlord wants a tenant who won't cause problems and will pay on time. Nobody except you is focused on whether this is actually a good place to live. That's your job, and it's worth doing thoroughly. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1930s, astronomers at an observatory on the Kamchatka Peninsula claimed to have discovered an undocumented lunar libration effect that made a previously mapped crater disappear from view for 17 years. The discovery was later attributed to a cracked telescope lens, and the crater was never actually missing.
A cracked lens erased a crater for 17 years. I feel like that says something about epistemology, but I'm too tired to figure out what.
That's going to bother me all day.
All right. Final thought. The best time to learn what you should have checked is not the day after you sign. Do the work up front. Be the person who seems a little too thorough, and sleep better knowing you didn't buy someone else's problem.
If you're renting, remember, the lease is a contract, not a favor. You have rights, and the best way to protect them is to document everything from the moment you first walk through the door.
This has been My Weird Prompts, produced by Hilbert Flumingtop. If you found this useful, share it with someone who's about to sign a lease or make an offer. It might save them from a foundationless addition.
Find us at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back with another one soon.
Until then, check your caulking.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird thoughts, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear hose. My weird problems, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.